reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like 2 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, whenever you're ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Victoria Johnson from the Attorney General's Office for the Commonwealth today. The basis of this appeal is that the trial court, in finding that there was only reasonable suspicion for trespassing rather than probable cause to arrest for trespassing, erred in this case, and we ask the Court to reverse. This case is controlled by this Court's prior decisions, particularly Joyce v. Commonwealth, which is, for a Fourth Amendment case, is pretty on point on the facts, even. As the Court knows, in Joyce, the defendant was loitering outside of a convenience store right under a no trespassing sign, and an officer observed him there loitering, and although the defendant actually made the same argument on appeal that prevailed in the trial court here, that while there was reasonable suspicion, there was no reasonable suspicion that the defendant was armed and dangerous to support a weapons frisk, this Court reversed and held that there was certainly probable cause for trespassing, and the search was supported by probable cause for arrest, and it was a search incident to arrest.
Counsel, wasn't that case in a slightly different posture, since this is a Commonwealth's appeal and the standard is different, and also because that was not a residential situation? Can you address those points?
Yes, Your Honor. Of course, we are the appellant in this case, meaning that the factual inferences, of course, go towards the appellee. Here, however, the Court made factual findings that's on pages 97 and 98 of the Joint Appendix. The Court credited the officer's testimony that the defendant told them that he was not a resident, and that the defendant was, you know, present there and did not give the officers further information. You know, he said, I'm here visiting my girl, but there wasn't really anything else. And as far as, I'm sorry,
this is Judge Beals. Is that a problem for the Commonwealth that the officers, after he says he's there visiting someone, and he doesn't know the address, he says, but he said her apartment's over there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a problem for the Commonwealth that the officers never ask him anything else about, well, what building is it, or what's her name, or anything like that?
No, Your Honor, it's not for a probable cause determination. For a couple of reasons. First, kind of the black letter law is that an officer is not required to, you know, have probable cause for each element of the crime. You know, the officer doesn't have to dispel every indication of innocence before having probable cause, because as the Court knows, this is a quick determination that officers frequently have to make on the fly. And second, there's really no indication that there was any kind of specific information from the defendant. He just said, I'm here to visit my girl or my sister, and just kind of gestured over there. It's kind of similar to the facts in Joyce, where the defendant said, oh, I was over at the convenience store buying blunts, but he was unable to produce a receipt. You know, it's kind of an excuse without any content to it. So it really didn't lend itself to further investigation. Second, to go back to Judge Decker's question about the difference between a convenience store and a residential location, they're somewhat similar, I submit, Judge Decker. The convenience store was obviously open for business. People were coming and going. Coming and going back and forth. The defendant was, in Joyce, was not near the doorway of the store. He was standing on the side wall of the store underneath the no trespassing sign, I believe near the dumpster. Here we have kind of a similar situation where the defendant is in a residential area, just kind of walking around. without any seeming purpose. He's walking around on his cell phone, passes right under two prominently displayed no trespassing signs. When the officers see him, they engage in a consensual encounter and say, you know, essentially, hey, who are you? Do you live here? And when he says, no, I don't live here. I'm here to see my girl. She lives over there. You know, the moment that he says that he doesn't live here, that's probable cause to arrest for trespassing right then. I mean, he's on the property without any legitimate purpose at that point.
Why is legitimate purpose, without at least some further questioning, the legitimate purpose is to visit his girlfriend or his sister? If they don't ask anything else, how is that dispelled unless you look at the terms of the lease, which I'm not sure how he's supposed to know the terms of the lease, that you're supposed to be escorted from the edge of the property to the apartment.
Well, Your Honor, and the signs don't advise him of the terms of the lease either. And that's not something that's required by law. Not only Joyce, but older cases that are cited on brief, in my briefs, Langston v. Commonwealth from 1998 and Jordan v. Commonwealth from 1966 talk about there being probable cause to arrest someone for trespassing when they are present on land or on property that is posted no trespassing. Here, the defendant was walking around on property that's posted no trespassing. The sign doesn't have to list every exception. The signs at Midlothian Village barred all trespassing. I mean, it doesn't have to have an asterisk with an exception, except if you're visiting people. It just simply bars all trespassing. And as is explained in the record and summarized on brief, that's because Midlothian Village has an extremely high crime rate, and Midlothian Village believes that high crime rate is caused by people coming, non-residents coming onto the property and, you know, selling drugs and whatnot. So they've adopted the strict no trespassing policy for that reason. The signs state no trespassing. The officers don't have to investigate whether the individual has a claim of right or whether he has the necessary criminal intent, like the Commonwealth would have to prove in a trespassing trial, in order to have probable cause. Probable cause is a much lesser standard.
So, now, and I certainly understand that, but let's just, to take that argument to its logical conclusion, if someone's minister came to visit them there, they would be trespassing.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And I think that all of the hypotheticals, you know, the trial judge went through the hypotheticals of, well, if my 90-something-year-old grandmother was there and she was bedridden and she couldn't come see me, you know, and couldn't come escort me from the entry to her home, then I would be a trespasser, then that is correct. Now,
you're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you very much. I'll just briefly try to address that question, and then I'll conclude. I submit that had the defendant said something like, I'm here visiting my sister, you know, Jenny Johnson, she lives at apartment 2B, we wouldn't have this problem. However, the defendant just made a vague, you know, I'm here visiting my girl, and made a gesture. That's really not enough to overcome probable cause, and I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. So this is Chris Bradshaw again, and may it please the court. The facts in this case are very simple, as we previously discussed. Excuse me. It's undisputed that the defendant was on privatized property that was posted no trespassing. However, the facts in the instant case are clearly distinct from those that are referenced in opposing counsel's brief. In this case, my client was simply walking through the property. At no point in time did the officers testify that he stopped or was doing anything that could be considered loitering. He was simply walking and talking on his cell phone, doing nothing else that would assert that criminal activity was afoot when he was approached by both police officers who were in uniform. Moreover, it was undisputed that my client did not do anything which could constitute evasive behavior. He didn't try to turn and walk the other way. In fact, he did stop when approached by both police officers, did answer their questions. He did concede that he didn't have identification. He did concede that he did not live there. That's undisputed. But he did tell them, when asked what he was doing there, that he was visiting a resident on the property. And while he did not have an opportunity to articulate that person's name, and he did admit he didn't know the address, he attempted to show them by pointing in the direction of the apartment where that person resided. It was, of course, at that point that he was told he was going to be patted down, and then we began the probable cause analysis at that point, to which the Commonwealth has argued. Now, I'll go to a couple of the cases that the Commonwealth has referenced. The first one, which in its brief the Commonwealth asserted is controlling, Joyce v. Commonwealth, is clearly distinct from the case that we have at hand. In that case, the defendant was standing directly under a no trespassing sign. I'll emphasize the defendant was standing and loitering there as he was being surveilled for drug activity.
Counsel, you're not taking issue with the fact that your client was aware that there were no trespassing signs, are you?
Certainly not, Your Honor. I'm clearly trying to draw a distinction that my client was not standing and loitering as the defendant was in Joyce. My client was walking, and I think that that's clearly a distinction between that case and the case in hand.
Understood. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Another clear distinction, and it's related to what I just mentioned, is the defendant in Joyce, did not attempt to go in or out of the store while he was being surveilled by the officers, which, as this court appropriately noted in its opinion, it was clear that he was not there for a legitimate purpose because he made no effort to enter or exit the store while he was being surveilled. Moreover, the court also noted that there were no doors on the side of the convenience store where the defendant in Joyce was standing. Moreover, in that particular case, the officers also observed Joyce engage in a suspicious hand-to-hand transaction with another individual. And the court again emphasized that this further stated and demonstrated that Joyce had no legitimate reason for entering the no trespassing area, which he was. The court also noted that when he was approached by police, that it was clear that Joyce was lying. When asked why he was on the property, he stated that he had purchased blunts, yet he was unable to produce a receipt. In this case, there is no evidence that Mr. Brown was being disingenuous at all or that he was lying. He simply stated that he was there to visit somebody. Despite the fact that there was a rental office on the premises, despite the fact that he attempted to show the officers where he was headed, they made no effort to confirm or dispel his allegation that he was there for a legitimate purpose. They made no effort whatsoever. So for those reasons, I believe the case at hand is clearly distinct from the facts which we have in Joyce. Another case which the Commonwealth relied on...
Judge Beals, how do you deal with the fact though, that the officers both said that he... was walking, just walking around and talking on his cell phone, that he continued to do so while they were trying to talk with him, and that he seemed very nervous and that his arms were shaking. When you look at the totality of that, why isn't there probable cause given the no trespassing signs and all of that?
Well, Your Honor, what we're looking at concerning the probable cause for trespassing is distinct from the analysis we would look at when regarding whether or not the officers had stated any indicia that he was armed and dangerous. That was one of the analyses the trial court considered in ruling on the motion to suppress, but it was at a second phase after the court had already ruled that there was no probable cause. In the analysis concerning whether or not the defendant is armed and dangerous, it is appropriate to view whether or not the person appears to be evasive or very nervous, and I believe that Officer Langston did testify that Mr. Brown's hands were shaking and he appeared to be very nervous. But even under that analysis, that in and of itself is insufficient to demonstrate the requisite armed and dangerous indicia to justify a pat-down frisk. However, that's
that be an indication for probable cause that criminal activity is afoot in general, whether it be trespassing or something else?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe that somebody appearing to be nervous in an encounter with a police officer is any indicia that they're unlawfully on the property. I think that the only indicia that this court can properly rely on in making that analysis for the purposes of probable cause is whether or not the officers had reason to believe he was on the property and he did not have a legitimate purpose for being on said property, or that he had been previously forbidden by somebody authorized to do so from being on that property. And that's what we don't have here, is any indicia that he had been previously forbidden by somebody or by a sign. While the signs were clearly posted, they simply stated no trespassing, violators will be prosecuted. It simply did not give any notice of Midlothian Village's purported policy that you actually had to be escorted by a leaseholder at any time to be on the property. There's no notice whatsoever, and under the language of Code Section 18.2-119, the statute states that any signs that the authorized user is going to be relying on to ban someone from the property, they must be posted at a place where they can be reasonably seen. And that's so that individuals that come onto the property are put on notice as to why they can or cannot be there. And that simply wasn't the case in this instance. To take it a step further, if you look at the facts in Joyce, if the convenience store there had a trespass policy that stated that any customers in red T-shirts couldn't come onto the property to engage in lawful business, but it wasn't clearly stated on a sign, certainly that wouldn't give rise to to police officers subjecting somebody to arrest for that trespassing policy. And I think that's what we have here. The key issue is really whether Mr. Brown was on notice of Midlothian Village's trespass policy and whether he had been previously barred from the property, and we certainly don't have that, nor do we have either one of the two officers having probable cause to believe that he had violated that code section 18.2-119, not necessarily the individual no trespassing policy as they testified Midlothian Village had. Another thing that I'll reference is Britt v. Commonwealth. That was a case that the Commonwealth relied on in its brief. This is an unpublished case. It's record number 2795-99-1. From year 2000. In this case, what the court noted was that even though the appellant in that case stated to the police that he did not live there and that I believe he told them that he was on the premises to visit somebody, at that point where the police were able to establish that he didn't live there, this court stated that they did have reasonable articulable suspicion to detain him at that point, but the court stated that at that point they were entitled to do so because they needed to determine whether he was in fact a trespasser or there for a legitimate guest to be on the premises. And that's essentially what the police did not do in this case. While you do have, it's undisputed that Brown told him he didn't live there, and while they may have had articulable suspicion to detain him, they did not have probable cause to take that additional step to subject him to an arrest and a full-scale search, which is, of course, what ensued.
Counsel, you spent a good bit of time distinguishing cases cited by the Commonwealth. You cite Harris and Ewell as authority for your position, but yet in neither of those cases did the officers know that the defendant was not a resident.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And that also basically stands to the proposition that a person's mere presence on privatized property is insufficient to detain them. There is a distinction in the case at hand because my client did notify the police that he was not a resident. The one case that I did cite in my brief that I believe is a little more on point is an unpublished case. It's Woodhouse v. Commonwealth, and this is record number 1707-00-2. This is from 2001, and I'll just quote a brief cite from this case. It says, Woodhouse's presence on the stoop was consistent with his explanation that he was there for the legitimate purpose of calling on a friend. The officer did not see Woodhouse go onto the stoop. No evidence disclosed that Woodhouse had not knocked on the door. His remaining on the stoop for a minute or two suggested no more than indecision. His departure upon the approach of the police officers could well have been coincidental, and at most suggested no more than a disinclination to encounter the police, a motive not necessarily criminal. In sum, the totality of the circumstances afforded Officer Carey no more than a hunch that Woodhouse was trespassing. In that case, Woodhouse conceded to the police officer that he didn't live on the privatized property, and he stated that he was there as a visitor of a resident. It's analogous to what we have here, and in that case, the court ruled in the defendant's favor. I would submit to the court that this is more on point than the cases that were referenced by the Commonwealth in its brief.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. Judge Beals or Judge Attlee, do either of you have any additional questions for Mr. Bradshaw?
I have one brief question, Mr. Bradshaw. Did I understand you in your argument a moment ago to say that your client was actually on his way to his sister's or girlfriend's apartment, not coming from there?
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that the testimony was that he told them that he was en route to a place, not departing from it.
Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Judge Attlee, anything from you?
No, ma'am. I have no questions.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
And thank you very much.
Ms. Johnson, we'll give you about a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will be extremely brief. because I have no choice, a couple of very quick points. I submit that the trespassing policy itself is somewhat of a red herring. The probable cause to arrest is probable cause to arrest for a violation of the statute, not, of course, for a violation of the Midlothian Village trespassing policy, kind of that private policy. And the statute is awfully clear. You know, an owner of property can bar trespassing by posting a sign that says, "No trespassers," or something similar. In Rabney Commonwealth, this court held that there didn't have to be any kind of magic words on the sign. It just had to, you know, give notice that people weren't allowed willy-nilly on the property. And that's exactly what we have here. We have a trial court finding that an individual was on property that was marked no trespass, and that's good enough for reasonable suspicion for trespassing. However, as was mentioned in prior argument, looking at the totality of these circumstances, an individual who was on property marked no trespassing walked right under no trespassing signs and kind of was acting sweaty and nervous, and his arms were shaking. According to the officers, after the officers started talking to him, wouldn't stop talking on his cell phone when officers approached him, and kind of gave a lame story when asked what he was doing there. I'm visiting my girl or my sister. The officer couldn't remember which he said. You know, the officers weren't required to believe that, and the officers were there firsthand. They're trained. They make these probable cause determinations and kind of on the spur of the moment, they're required to do that. Under this court's case law, that's enough for probable cause. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's okay. I was just going to tell you your time is up, but I was going to ask if either Judge Beals or Judge Attlee have any questions.
And no further questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you both, counsel. Have a good afternoon. The case is submitted to the court.